So did you notice we had Jesus as doing the second reading? No, I'm kidding. Good to have Mitch. That was his first time being the lector today, so good to have you. So the Pharisees continue their questioning of Jesus that we saw last Sunday. And they asked Jesus what the greatest commandment of the law is. In essence, what's the whole purpose of our life? And Jesus responds with his famous answer that we should all know by heart. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Well, if that's truly the case, if the whole of our life should simply be to love God with all that we are, then shouldn't we just abandon all that we're doing and enter the nearest monastery or convent? I mean, if I'm supposed to love God with all my heart and with all my soul and with all my mind, what does that leave for anybody else? What does that leave for loving my spouse and my family? What does that leave for loving my neighbors and my friends? If we're thinking along those lines, that loving God with all we've got means being a monk or a nun, or that we're not called to love God as much as a monk or a nun or a priest is supposed to, you know, or if we think that loving God with all my being means I have less love to give to other people, then we really need to have a paradigm shift of our idea of what it means to love God. And maybe even a paradigm shift of our idea of who God even is. Because if we're thinking that our love for God takes away our capacity and our attention to love others in our lives, then we're falling into a trap, the same trap, as a lot of atheists do. Believe it or not. What do I mean by that? I'm getting a little theological here, but we should all have this adult understanding of who God is and who God is not. See, when a lot of these famous atheists who argue that there is no God, their idea or conception of God is not the God that we believe. It's a straw man version of who God is. And it's easy then to poke fun or ridicule theists, people who believe in God, if God is this mistaken caricature that atheists imagine God to be. You know, if the God that many atheists pose is God, then I would wholeheartedly agree with them that God, the God they're thinking, doesn't exist. Bishop Robert Barron, who engages with a number of these new atheists, points out their common error, which is that they conceive God to be some reality in the world or somehow existing above or alongside the world, and that of all the beings in the universe, God is the supreme being of them all. In other words, the mistake is thinking of God as another type of being among other beings in the universe, right? He may very well be the greatest of them all, but in the end, he's still considered a type of being. Like, there's human beings, there's canine beings, right? There's plant beings, things that have being, etc. So someone might say, well, God is a divine being. Isn't that a type of being? Well, sure, but that can mean, you know, the mythological conception of God that the ancient Greek and Romans had. You know, the mythological gods like Zeus, the god of the sky, Poseidon, the god of the sea, and Apollo, the god of the sun. These fictitious characters may be depicted as superhuman and the preeminent examples of being, but in the end, they're still mere instances of being in the universe in competition with other gods. So what serious theists believe, what the church professes God to be, is that God is not just an item or an individual being in the universe, but God rather is the, as St. Thomas Aquinas uses the Latin phrase, ipsum esse subsistens, right? That is to say that God is being itself. He is the subsistent act of to be itself. And so if you're being itself, you're not, you know, one thing among many things in the world, even if you might be the greatest instance among them all. No, if you're being itself, then as Bishop Barron puts it, you're, quote, you are the great ocean of existence from which the world in its entirety comes. Not something in the world, but the condition for the possibility of the world. That's God. So God is not something you could ever measure scientifically because he's outside of the universe that he created. Right? Everything that exists in the universe is a participation in God's being. Anything that emanates from God, anything that is, emanates from God, who is being itself. And as Genesis reveals, everything that he created is good. Right? Everything that he created is true and beautiful. But here's the thing, because we human beings are made in his image and likeness, we have a free will. Because in order to be like God, who is love, we obviously must have the capacity to love. And free will is necessary to love. But if you can't, you know, you can't truly love if you don't have the choice not to love. So it's by the abuse of that gift of freedom that evil and disharmony are introduced into the world. Freedom was not given to us to be disrespectful, to disparage, and to hate. You know, freedom was not given to us to abuse, to be racist, to break the law. Freedom was not given, as the first reading reminds us, to neglect the widow, the orphan, or the alien. No, freedom was given to us so that we can love as God loves. And so, now that we have a proper understanding of who God is, that he's not just a being in the universe, but ipsum esse subsistence, that is, being itself, and everything that has being comes from him, then can we now see the whole meaning of our existence then is to love God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our mind. If you love someone, then you also love the good that the person you love has brought into the world. And the good that God has brought into the world includes your spouse, your kids, beautiful creation, right? Each and every one of us who are made in the image and likeness of God. And the fact that we human beings are made in the image and likeness of God is why loving one's neighbor is so closely linked with loving God. So loving our neighbor does not take anything away from loving God, and loving God doesn't take anything away from loving our neighbor. In fact, we can love God in our neighbor. And loving our neighbor is a test of our sincere love of God. And remember what St. John, our patron of this parish, what John called people who say they love God, but they don't love their neighbor. He calls them liars. And here's a great thing about the first and greatest commandment. Loving God with all our heart, soul, and mind helps us to order all our other loves. In other words, it informs us how we are to love all the other things in our life. So let me explain that a little bit. Sometimes we'll order our priorities. You know, it's football season right now. Lumen Christi just won its first playoff game. It's on people's minds, so I'll use football as an example. Folks like quarterbacks like Derek Carr and Tim Tebow, and both of the coaches of MSU and U of M, Jim Harbaugh and D'Antonio, have expressed their priorities in this nice, pithy phrase. They'll say, first it's faith, then family, and then football. All right, faith, family, football. Catchy way to say that God is first, and then my family, and then my obligations to the rest of the community, particularly through my work, right? And that's fantastic. I wish more people in our world had those top priorities and lived them, right? It would be a lot more peaceful and happy place. So while putting God first is great, guess what? Today's gospel, Jesus is calling us to even more. Because when Jesus tells us to love God with all our heart and with all our soul and with all our mind, he's implying that there, you know, that putting God first isn't good enough. He needs to be everything. When we say he's first, we're falling into that trap of making him a thing in the universe, right? But he's much bigger than that. God is being itself from which everything else receives being. The way scripture puts it, in him we live and move and have our being. We can't even take our next breath without him. So anything less than him being our all in all isn't enough. That's why we are to love him with all our heart, all our soul, all our mind. And here's the beautiful thing about that. Loving God alone opens us up to loving everything else rightly. We don't have to feel torn or divided about all the other loves in our life. You know, I love my family in my love of God. And the goodness and the beauty and the love I experience in the family draws me closer, not just to my family members, but to God himself. And the same goes for everything else. I love my work in God. I love football in God. I can even love pizza in God. Right? Everything is in relation to our love of God, who is our all in all. And when we love all those people and things in our life in God, then we love them in the way and to the degree that they should be loved. You know, one of the things that can mess up our life is that loving or valuing things inordinately, right? We can put wanting a certain lifestyle or love things, loving things above loving people. We place, you know, the love of the world and its temptations and its honors over God and his commandments. So that's what gets, you know, marriages into trouble. That's what gets children to feel neglected. That's why loneliness and depression is so rampant. People fall for the consumeristic mentality that I have to have this stuff or this experience. And so we end up loving things over loving people. But when our solitary love is God, then we order our desires and love those things, those other things, as we should. We love the people in our life as we should. We love our work to the degree that we should. We can even love pizza to the degree that we should love pizza, right? If we put all our love for pizza out of context from our love of God, and we put our love into all our love into pizza, what's going to happen? We're going to get pretty big and unhealthy and unbalanced, right? I mentioned pizza because that's the one area I have to surrender more fully to God's will, right? But if we love and desire things in the way and to the degree God meant them to be loved, then we don't have to be slaves to our personal whims or our base passions. We don't have to feel conflicted, like we don't know what to do with this mess of competing interests in our life. By loving God with all your being, you're putting all those things in the context of God's calling for your life. That's the enjoyment, the harmony, and the peace that God desires for each of us. Which is why prayer is so important, right? In prayer and in our worship here, we get back to the basics. We put aside all those things that are stressing us out. We put all those things in our life that in the end are insignificant, and focus on the one thing necessary that gives any meaning to all of it. And that one whom we are to love with all our heart, all our soul, and all our mind gives us his very life in the Eucharist. So let's prepare now for God's gift of himself.